Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Well, this is Patrick from The Fundamental Principle. I'm going to continue with Jesus Christ, Hyperborean Prince. The figure of Jesus in the Gnostic Hyperborean tradition. On the other side of the anti-Christian Kabbalistic current, we find the pagan Gnostic tradition, which considers the Gospels to be merely an imitation or plagiarism of the Hindu Vedas. The Gnosis is known as a primordial or hyperborean gnosis. According to various authors with different variations of this wisdom traces its origin to myths that are temporarily placed after the sinking of Atlantis. Regarding the myth of Atlantis, there's three general claims that often are made. One, it disappeared due to some kind of natural catastrophe. Two, it contains deposits of the metal called orichalcum, according to considered more noble than gold. The Atlanteans possessed a technology superior to modern advancements. At this point, it's some linked to the Hindu mythology, specifically. The last point is often linked to Hindu mythologies, specifically linked to Shakuna Vimana, which describes, for example, vehicles propelled by electric energy. Atlantis mentioned in Plato's dialogues, Critias and Timaeus, is depicted as a prosperous confederation of kings. The continent is described as an archipelago located near solid landmasses, including Libya, Egypt, Tyrrhenia, and western Italy. Later, according to Tiberius, the more specific according to Solon, who serves as the narrator, a violent earthquake and an extraordinary flood caused Atlantis to sink and disappear beneath the sea in a single day and night. To understand primordial gnosis, it is necessary to be familiar with the so-called Golem Conspiracy. According to the Hyperborean wisdom, the sinking of Atlantis was caused by a war between gods, essentially, a celestial metaphysical battle at the dawn of humanity. The loyal and liberating gods formed this host of the unknowable, the true God, who is not the creator, and fought to the death against the traitor gods who serve the one God, the Demiurge, the creator of matter, also called Jehovah Satan, or the God of Kabbalah, in the latest instance, his material kingdom, which is a prison for the uncreated spirit, keeping it subjected to a great deception. So, I mean, as we're getting into Gnosis, like, a lot of this just seems like it's made up to me. I want to believe in Atlantis. I think it's fun. I don't think it's real. Or there's an idea of real, but like this idea of like demiurge and like the Gnosticism is just kind of made up. And I think he goes into it a little bit, but I mean, there could have been, like, we don't know what time was like before Noah, and the Atlantis could have been like this split off of humanity where they had all the advanced tech, and you know, the Book of Enoch could be correct. And it's just these evil angels came down and gave humanity like makeup and technology and all the ability to have all these, you know, internet and flying cars and whatever. And then God's just like, hey, this sucks, so I'm just going to nuke it with water. I mean, that could have been. I mean, I think that's fun to think about. But, you know, he'll kind of go into this a little bit more. But it talks about, like, monogenesis. So, like, the church, up until about the 40s, believed in monogenesis, which is the idea that we all come from Noah's sons, that there was no mixing outside blood, you know, from other Homo sapiens, Homo, like the Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal. I think that's more of a gnosis thing, or people getting tricked by, or they're wanting to be more of an elaborate history, or more of like a fantastical history. And it sometimes it's just not. Sometimes it's just like the Bible's true. But I'll continue reading here. The first men, the Lanthians, took part in the battle divided into two separate factions. The dark-skinned Lanthians were loyal to the forces of matter and sealed a cultural pact with the Demiurge, a bond based on blood tribute and ritual worship, including sacrificial holocausts. The white Lanthians, on the other hand, remained unmoved by the matter and were connected by the liberating gods through a blood pact, a Gnostic initiatory path, both commonly known as blood memory, of the uncreated origin of their imprisoned spirit. White Atlanteans, Cro-Magnons, yeah, here we go with the, this breaks from Catholic tradition of monogenesis. White Atlanteans, the Cro-Magnon men, possessed uncreated spirit, whereas the dark Atlanteans, Neanderthals, were animal men, Pashu, endowed with the souls of consciousness, with soul consciousness. The latter were exterminated by the former, who became the guardians of the lithic wisdom, the man of stone. The dark-skinned Atlantean survived by accepting the command of the Demiurge, which included destroying the megalithic structures of the white Atlanteans. After the sinking of Atlantis, the white Atlanteans journeyed towards the city of Kanar, or Agartha, located in the ancient continent known as Hyperborea, a vortex leading to the uncreated world. The vortex in the Lumphic Thule, Hyperborean, means the homeland of the spirit. The white Atlanteans claim to be led by a white chief called Navutan, according to the Iberian Tartessian condition, Wotan, according to the Germanic tradition, Odin, according to the Nordic Scandinavian tradition. The cultural pack was aligned with Sanat, the one god who installed himself on the throne of the ancient kings of the world, the corn palace of the white Island Goyer, later known as Tibet, and Jehovah Satan commanded an army of angels. So keep in mind, like, the Gnostics believe the God of the Old Testament is really the evil person because of how, like, evil he is, how he just, like, likes killing Jews because they disobey, and he's just mean and crazes war. So that's for those that are not familiar. Jehovah Satan commanded an army of angels, the Seraphim Nephilim, who were known as traitor gods of the unknowable God. They established a dominion over the descendants of the dark-skinned Atlanteans, gathering under a hidden hierarchy, the Order of Melchizedek, or the White Brotherhood. Their tradition later spread across Europe through the Celtic Druidic lineage. There is some archaeological evidence that links ancient Egypt of the time of Moses to the Celtics. So it would have been, there was like this trainee spirit pharaoh thing that supposedly ruled over, I want to say it's like Tomb 55 was this, this like trainee demons pharaoh's tomb. And it was considered to be, a lot of the evidence of this fairy or this demon was erased because of how ashamed they were. But Anyways, so like this would the training demon ended up. I'm serious. Like it wasn't. It was like a possession, and the archaeological evidence says both man and woman. So it was had both sexes. It could have been unisex, but there was also like demonic issues going on with what's it called? I can't think of the word. When it's both genitalia, but like this like man grew breasts. And yeah, it was just a weird thing. So it very much could have been like a demonic change in this pharaoh. But the idea is that these druidic refugees from Egypt ended up sailing and landing in northwest Europe. And that's where we get the druidic history. But I will continue. Over the time, the cultural pact prevailed, and many white Atlanteans succumbed to the confusion of the great deception of the demiurge creator, the occult wisdom of the animal men in Kabbalah, whereas the wisdom of Vishra, the man of stone, in the primordial Hyperborean gnosis, attained through transmutation. The Manu of the Aryan race is Manu Vaivasta. The liberation of the spirit is possible through the initiatory path of Hyperborea gnosis, access through blood memory. A power lies in the secret of the sacred runes of the Futhark, depicted by the god Wotan when he hung on the ash tree Yggdrasil. The knowledge remains of the Hyperborean initiates, gathering them, protecting during the Kali Yuga, the Age of Iron, until Ragnarok, the final battle. In the ancient Germanic language, runa means whisperer. Translated the Latin version of the Bible, the Vulgate, into the German vernacular, he used runa to translate mystery, the mysteries of the kingdom. Juan Cespedes, a scholar of early works of the Volkish movement, founded in Guido von Liszt's estates, the archaeological and biological research suggests that from the very beginning of the Bronze Age, Indo-Germanic tribes began carrying symbols resembling hieroglyphs on stone, wood, metal, bone, and using them as ideographs and magical purposes. The official academic theory today claims that in a gradual process lasting from approximately 200 BC to 180, the runic alphabet consisted through contact between Germanic tribes and the Greek Usicans and the Latin peoples of northern Italy. In other words, the glyphs used by the Germanic and Celt merged with and adapted to the structural written language of the Mediterranean European civilizations. In this way, symbols previously used for the magic and initiatory purposes eventually shaped a phononic and written dialect. So, and it gives examples of Futhark. My listeners, I do don't want you to cast this aside as some nonsense. I do believe in magic. I think you should believe in magic. Like you should believe in the spiritual things. Like if there's the good and the bad. There's more to this world. There's more to this creation than we're told. And as Americans, we tend to dissect and destroy any sort of mysticism. And I there's a big issue with like the evangelicals. You know, Sola Scriptura cut us off from nature, cut us off from animals. Like before humanism. Before Martin Luther and the idea of words alone can dictate faith, man was a part of nature. Man had a concept of the animal and as a shepherd. And that might be something we look into, the idea of race, the idea of, you know, a man is a part of the land, and we're so disconnected from that. I think it's we're too scientific, we're too, like, science and electricity is our magic right now. And then I think there's parts of the world that we don't understand. Obviously, God's in control. Bible talks, the scriptures talk about, especially in Acts, talks about like wizards, you know, ball cultists, and there's just a lot of more, I think, more going on, like the idea of Solomon's spent his entire life trying to control demons through magic instead of just being like submissive to the Lord. We have stories of Saint Teresa having command over demons. A couple other saints, like Saint Joseph, now has terror of demons. But I think there was other saints while they were living that had that terrified demons. Especially focus on when you focus on humility and you put God before you and God desire for you above everything. That is really a control over the passions and control over the spirit itself. That's how the world we exist without sin.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
But a lot of this seems like childish and made up. I do want you to take it for a grain of salt, take it for what it is. It could be made up, but I do think there's an issue. We as Americans that want to demystify everything, but I'll continue here. The Talmudic Kabbalistic scholars have regarded Jesus as the false Messiah. The Hyperborean tradition, an enemy of Kabbalic esotericism, has in turn considered Jesus to be a false Christian. The true Christos, according to this view, is Wotan, who self-sacrificed to attain the wisdom of the runes, sacrificing one of his eyes. From the perspective of his history, the historical Jesus never existed. Rather, he is seen as an archetypical construction of that compiles elements from the Nordic Indo-Aryan tradition, with the veiled purpose of Judaizing pagans to this Odinism of the true Christos. Hyperborean wisdom adds the origin of Kali Tantra, of Shaivism, as well as inherited Luciferian and polytheism, Luciferianism and Promethean reading, in which Cain represents the uncreated spirit and Abel symbolizes the soul of the animal man. The Canaanite murder is thus seen as a symbol of liberation, the awakening of blood memory that escapes from prison, and the rejection of servitude and worshiping through sacrificial acts and obedience to the one God. I mean, we still have the sacrificial acts. Like, that's when we're putting our will aside, or when we're putting our desires or aside for God, or when we're putting our emotions aside for the Lord. You know, we may be still angry at somebody or something, and then we, you know, put that aside and focus on prayer. I mean, those sacrificial acts do matter. However, the crucifixion of Jesus is not encountered to the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Seneca, Leva, Plutarch, and other historians reference the practice of crucifixion in various writings. Moreover, the historical Jesus is mentioned by Roman historians Cornelius Tacitus, Pliny the Younger, and Suetonius, as well as non-Roman historians Tallis and Flagian, and by the satirical writer Lucian of Samosata. Even the Jewish Talmud is vilifying him, acknowledges his existence. Nonetheless, the primordial tradition of the Blood Pact refers to Jesus as an act of deception, a figure constructed from elements of ancient Hindu and pagan myths, orchestrated by the enemies of the cultural pact and the demiurge Synarch. However, prominent authors have recognized the Hellenic connection between Jesus Christ, the Gnostic tradition, Indo-Aryan religions, some aspects of Gabalinism, Gelabellinism comes from the Italian words. I don't know what this is. I can't pronounce this. Gelabellinism. If you guys want to look it up, it's like an Italian thing from the 12th century. Yeah, I think there's a lot of bored rich people doing weird things. Have been described as similar to and conductive to a form of Hellenistic Christianity, spirituality that many points in common with certain ancient pre-Christian heroic and pagan traditions. For European peoples, the way of life stands apart from many of the moral paradigms have dominated the West recent centuries. In contrast, Gelabellinism would fully represent the monotheistic Judeo-Christianity papal morality that prevails in the current Catholic institutions. The connection between Nordic pagan Gnosticism and the Indo-Aryan wisdom have been explored by the Chilean thinker Miguel Serrano. I tried reading Serrano, and he just sucks. He's too wrapped up in Gnosticism. A big reason, like, why the white identity movement, because it haven't done anything, because like it hasn't honored God, it hasn't 1.0, the skinhead stuff, and a lot of like Dr. Pierce. They've just been crazy people that refuse to submit themselves to God. Like, why would God reward anybody with victory over their enemies if he's not being honored? So a lot of this is just, they want something to be true. They want Hitler to be this super king that'll come back from Agartha, rather than just the simplicity of, like, you know, just submit yourself to the cross, submit yourself to Jesus. They want this complex history, the secret history, and they're just like bored. A lot of the people who focus on like Kabbalah and wanting things to be like this complex and hidden. No, politics is really just simple. It's a bunch of gay nerds that are ruled over us. Gays, Jews, or sometimes gay Jews. It's like, it's not like, this isn't complicated, folks. We don't need to overcomplicate this. We should, the politics shouldn't be overcomplicated like this. Whose works focus? I don't know. Continue here. Whose works focus on the recognizing the Tetrarch alchemy of ancient India with medieval Shavistic orders of the SS and the Third Reich. His work, obsessive effort to link Tetrarch metaphysics with esoteric Hitlerism. A partial successor of the pagan traditions of Julius Savola and René Guénon, both like loved Islam. So I don't know why we're like as white people, white Europeans, were like praising the love of Islam. I'm sure, like, so, and you may ask, you know, Patrick, why are you dissing Islam if you support Palestinians? Because it's different. Like, I can be against genocide. I can be against the brutal death of a people, and still be against their religion. They're inhumane treatment. Like, we're, as Catholics, we should be against inhumane treatment, but that doesn't mean like we are shilling for the religion. I'm sure, you know, my audience is smart enough to know the difference, but just for sake of argument, for sake of straw man, somebody. Serrano believed that the racial struggle was merely one aspect of the primordial esoteric war. The Aryans must preserve memory, the minnow, the hyperborean remembrance, the sacred elixir was called Soma, the drink of immortality that vanished trees, perhaps from the tree of blood, the tree of paradise, and the lost Aryan Viata. In the Uma Thule, the primordial Soma has been lost. The Germanic troubadours practiced a ceremonial cult called the Minnedrinken, in which they drunk in the memory of love, remembrance of eternal love and eternal life. Surely they drank Soma, the magical blood of the race, through which flows memory of Hyperborea and the golden-haired priestesses of eternal Ice and the Morning Star. Serrano also like worships Lucifer. He talks a lot about like Gnosticism. Like Lucifer is the hero in Gnosticism. He talks about like loving Lilith is this heroic figure that rebelled against Yahweh, and how Yahweh is a mean man that just uses humans for suffering to feed off their suffering. So that's what Serrano believes. Now I do believe in the idea of like this galactic civilization, this globalistic civilization rather. There is like Germanic pagan art found in Machu Picchu in Peru. That's just like through archaeology, and there was some evidence that the Aztec language spoke Old German, but it was translated different by the Spanish monks as they were copying their language down. Maybe there was like Germans in South America, Central America. I like to think so. I like to think that there was this like global empire, and that and like I said, it is fun to think about and how much we don't know about all this stuff. But it's like when you get into worshiping Lucifer and Lilith and the Morning Star, I'm starting to and maybe this is a little too silly. Now we must ask, is the Chalice of Christ's royal blood a Hyperborean blood pact? Is the ancient Christ not a prince of the world that is a demiurge reigning over matter? Was it not the demiurge who led Jesus to the high mountain, showed him the kingdom of the world and their glory, and said, quote, all of these things I will give you if you bow down and worship me, unquote. However, Theander marks an incidental difference between Gnosis and Christianity. While Christianity is based on theandric mystery, that is, the unity of God and man, in which God chooses to assume human nature, the primordial Gnosis is found as a reversal andrognithic principle, which each individual begins being lies as an uncreated spirit that must return to the uncreated origin through a blood memory. In view, each person is essentially their own god. Manivel states, quote, in the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, I hate Indians. In Nipedagis, the soul of the internal uncreated. In Christian anthropological, the soul is neither a portion, a fragment, or made of divine substance. It is created in its creature. It does not pre-exist its body, nor does it pass from the body to blood, nor is it fallen into an evil body. Two issues that must be distinguished here. First, Manivel is criticizing the Cathar Albigensian heresy and associating it with Kabbalistic infiltration. That is because we have not noticed that Manivel was profoundly a scholar of Kabbalah, but not of Hyperborean Gnosis, which is fundamentally different from the and opposes Kabbalah. Hyperborean wisdom differentiates between the soul consciousness of the animal man and the uncreated spirit, which through blood memory enables the awakened Varia to return to the origin. Nevertheless, Manivel's observations is relevant in the Christianity and does not accept a androtheism like the first pagan, the first Gnosis. Androtheism is radically different from the notion pointed out by the Thomas theologian. The uncreated is not a result of the soul's participation in the whole, the one God as a part of a fragment of the same theopathic manifestation. Hyperborean Gnosis is entirely of the created spirit. For Hyperborean Gnosis, the entirety of the uncreated spirit is, on the contrary, recognition of the uncreated essence that predates matter, into which contrasts a potential of the demiurgic origin. For a Christian perspective, the critiques of demonstrations of the corporeal in the material universe is valid because in Christianity there is no dualism between the demiurge, the creator, and the unknowable and the true God. The created world and the body are not prisons for the spirit, but rather something good that later became sinful. In Catholic tradition, the creation of Eden is not the ultimate veil of tears. It later becomes a consequence of Adam's disobedience. I like how he says Adam's disobedience and not Eve's. I really think we should focus on Adam's failure as a man, rather Eve's failure as a woman. Creation was originally good, but later became corrupt. In Gnosis, however, creation is a prison and a deception. In Christianity, Satan, the fallen angel, father of lies, and liar of the beginning, seduces man and leads him to idolatry and matter, therefore stripping him of divinity. This is why Christianity condemns the idolatry of matter, a concept that does bear semblance to Kabbalah, where the material order, it seems, as an unfolding of Ein Sol. Ein Sol is like pagan Kabbalah, like nonsense. The Christian God, as presented by Christ himself, seems to distance himself from the wrathful Jehovah, introduces the new concept of theandric God. The Christian God, as presented by Christ himself, seems to distance himself from the wrathful Jehovah, introduces new concepts of theandric God, the Godnosis, Theos, who manifests himself in Christ and through Christ divinizes man. So, I do think God, Jehovah, and Christ kind of separate themselves, because the Hebrews were supposed to be the worst people on the planet at the time. I mean, obviously there's some worse people. Or, I mean, we're supposed to be bad. That was the whole point of, and then they ended up, I mean, we in the New Testament, so it's like they're supposed to be like these stiff-necked, crazy people that don't want to listen. God's like, if I can prove my glory, I can prove my majesty by fixing these people. All they have to do is submit to my will, and I give them the grace to change, to give them the graces to be better. Obviously, we know how that goes. But like, I think Jesus comes down and is like, "Hey, everybody else is kind of like okay. You know, I can get along with everybody else. I can get along with, you know, Europeans. I can get along with blacks." They're more reasonable than the Hebrew. And I think that's why we see this personality change from, you know, God the Father, Jehovah, and Christ. You know, I think it ended up like 2 million Jews die in the Old Testament. Something crazy. Some astronomical number. And just because they won't listen, they won't submit. And we're dealing that today. Is just, you know, these people won't submit to the Lord. They won't put their issues or racial desires or the love for mammon above, before the Lord, and give it up. If the Kabbalistic deviation leads to collectivism, in which the chosen people become their own messiah, forming a hive soul, then the Gnostic androthesis leads to atomization, whereas the individual attains salvation through initiatory knowledge without and it mediates. And that's the whole... we might read this later. I think we should. I think Pete reads this. PQ reads this. Judaism and Strange Gods. It talks a lot about how, like, the whole concept behind Judaism is the worship of, like, this father and mother, and the mother has sex with her son. And it's like, you know, you only learn this if you, you know, study scripture days and days and days. And that's their, you know, that's how they get to heaven, or how they get to their afterlife, is just offering themselves out to this prayer-eating evil spirit. The theandric mystery, however, teaches at neither one nor the other. Instead, it is the one Christ that we are saved. Man's merit in salvation is recognizing Christ as the path to salvation. The figure of Jesus in relation to ancient religions. In search of the scriptures, from in them you think you have eternal life, and they testify of me. John 5:39. A quote from the Julio Manville, the three biblical peoples in the struggle for the world. And there were the righteous who aligned their lives with this law of nature. This can be thought particularly of the great men of Brahmanism in India, who through symbols of their highest theological metaphysical principles attained such a exalted knowledge of divine matters that today one might have believed to be the exclusive heritage of Christians. Both the esotericism of Kabbalah and the primordial gnosis proclaim themselves to be pure tradition directly transmuted by the divine. However, with due respect, we may question such purity, as both traditions have prior points of convergence with various occult sources, and many at times including in many aspects while differing in others. As we have seen, the figure of Jesus denied by opposing esoteric gnosis within the essential war, the Kabbalah Talmudic tradition, and the Odinist Hyperborean tradition, while under Semitic and Indo-Aryan cultures, respectively, the Pharisaical supremacy has denied Christ for not being Jewish, while supremacists have denied Christ for not being Jewish. Ariosophists have denied him for the exact reason: he's Hebrew in origin. Indeed, if it were possible to determine the true origin of Jesus, one of these negations would lose its justification. Although scholars have rejected it, the Old Testament professes the lineage of the Messiah. The Messiah would come from Israel, is announced in Numbers. He would be a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and is foretold in Genesis. He would be born into the family of David. It is declared in Genesis 49. The prophet Micah announces his birth of Bethlehem of Judah. Micah 5. Isaiah prophesies that he would be born of a virgin, and that he would preach along the Jordan River in the region of Galilee. The prophets also announced that the kingdom founded upon the Anointed One would have a new characteristic. They foretold the beginning of the new covenant between God and man, Daniel 9. It would begin in Jerusalem, Micah 4. It would represent the victory of monotheism, Zechariah 13, Isaiah 2, Micah 4. It would be universal, Isaiah 10, Michael. It would be universal. It would have, that's Isaiah 10. It would have priests and teachers throughout the world, Isaiah 66 and Jeremiah 3. It would establish a universal sacrifice. It would establish a universal sacrifice, Malachi 1. Ultimately would manifest the victory over its enemies, Psalms 2, Isaiah 5, Daniel 2. In the New Testament, each and every one of these prophecies was fulfilled. However, it is also possible to see Jesus' characteristics that do not solely reference the Jewish tradition. Jesus introduces new and unique teachings and broke with many precepts and commandments of Hebrew tradition. Moreover, the context in which Jesus lived was heavily influenced by the expectations of the time. The Jews believed the Messiah would free for them from the Roman rule and restore the kingdom of Israel. Here, a first betrayal occurred. The Jews disordered the transcendence and eschatological nature of the Messiah. Jesus was as if the Exodus under Egyptian tyranny in Christ's name, a military revolutionary leader, was expected to go against the newly established Roman Empire. Since the Jews still vividly remember the Maccabean liberation movement, many leaders influenced the people, fostering false hopes about the identity of the Messiah. By the time Jesus of Nazareth presented himself as God, the Jews had only recently been freed from Hellenic tyranny. So we might ask, what if the Messiah himself had come from this same Seleucid tyranny? Before answering this question, let us examine the characteristics of the historical Jesus Christ. The Chilean author Carlos Diem, in his attempt, we consider somewhat misguided, seeks the demonstration that the gods are the result of a conspiracy and constitute an artificial narrative based on mythology from the ancient Vedas. However, the author exclusively and adequately establishes similarities between the birth of Christ and the Hindu narrative, yet his argument that this constitutes outright plagiarism is insufficient, according to the Vedic texts, such as the Atharva Veda, fulfill a word of Brahman God, brings forth Vishnu, the second person of the Brahmatic Trinity, and the Redeemer Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is in narrative that a virgin named Devaki falls into a deep sleep, and her divine majesty, the spirit of God, overshadows her, according to the Sanskrit expression, causes her to conceive miraculously. It is indeed very true that the theandric and Trinitarian conception of Jesus Christ coincides in this specific aspect of the ancient Hindu religion. The Nativity of Agni was celebrated in India on the night of December 25th. The Brahmin and the faithful would proceed to the mountain and announce the appearance of the Star of Nativity. To the Brahmin's right stood the carpenter who carved the swastika cross as a symbol of the sun and truth. At the center of the cross symbolizes the Virgin Maya. A flame would ignite, signifying the birth of the divine child, Sol Invictus. For this reason, Constantine, influenced by the Mithraic tradition, chose the date of the nativity of our Lord, December 25th. I thought the church did not take from the Indians. This is implying, but the church took it from the Numication. Now it was 9 months celebrated after the Numication. I don't know how much influence Indian religion would have over Constantine. That seems a little far-fetched to me. It's not a biblical date, rather a kairos, a symbolic moment connecting the birth of Jesus and the Roman Mithras. Okay, I see what he's saying. He's not the Mithraic tradition. Okay, I don't know. Maybe. But I think it makes a little bit more sense. I mean, it could be both. As well as with the Yule celebrating the Nordic pagans, the characteristics of Mithras, whether Hindu, Persian, or Roman, converged with Jesus in an astronomical number of similarities. The tyrant Kamsa, king of Methula, like Herodon, had a dream in which he would be overthrown by the son of the virgin Devaki. Then he ordered the massacre of all children under two to prevent the prophecy from being fulfilled. The night of the Redeemer Krishna was born, assassins arrived at the virgin's dwelling, but a miracle occurred. The newly born baby suddenly grew to the height of a 10-year-old child. When the soldiers found him, they were unable to kill him and thus failed to carry out their sovereign's orders. Unfortunately, driven by prejudice that the religion's sole purpose is submission, Dina sees the parallels and similarities merely as an act of plagiarism designed to deceive and subjugate. He echoes the Feuerbachian thesis of religion is the opium of the people, as if mythical narratives necessarily imply a linear temporal correlation, like historical events must follow a causal relationship. I mean, I would also agree that it is the opium of the people, but I also don't think it's a bad thing. You know, we need to have religion. A lot of people just shouldn't. A lot of people don't have the ability to think for themselves. And that's here nor there. That's just how God designed some people. So they should have a good and holy priest as their authority figure. And to think otherwise is just silly. You know, causes stability, gives men a reason to pray, gives women a reason to pray. It centers God in our lives. You know what? Clearly, the opposite is like you, the millennial man child collecting Funko Pops. That's his religion, is Funko Pops and being nice and kind. So I'd rather have the religious opium of the people than like a Funko Pop dystopia. Here we encounter the false antinomy, myth versus religion. Myths are timeless and cyclical, and they can share common elements related to. They can share common elements related to cosmogenesis and the astrological truth that manifests in historical events, and in a typical manner, the form of tradition, and clearly carry a sacred character. Both Hyperborean wisdom and Kabbalah reject a linear view of time. The Swiss psychiatrist and psychologist Carl Jung once stated, myths, as far from being imaginary fantasies, are manifestations of the typical forces of the collective consciousness of each lineage. Myths should not be interpreted as a historical accounts, but neither should they consider the unreal simply because they are myths. The mythological is not synonymous with fantasy. It is merely a story imposed by the individual onto the ignorant majority, but rather a form of wisdom that emerges from astral and universal relationships, truths that never lose their relevance. With Jesus, the arbitrary anti-cyclical stance has taken, denying all the will of the ancestral myths, and the Indo-Aryan people converge into the figure in a way that has never happened before. The death and resurrection of the sun correspond with the winter solstice. During this time, December 22nd, the sun reaches its lowest point, dies near the constellation of the Southern Cross, remains still for 3 days until another group of stars, the three Marys, the three kings, the Orange Belt, points towards it, and on December 25th, it resurrects by arising again. These aspects, which relate both to the nativity and the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, may either be a false cosmological attributions, as has been claimed, or on the contrary, indicative of divine designs. I think this kind of goes back to what I said earlier. You know, as Americans, it's easy to like demystify everything, but I think we should believe in divine designs. We should believe in the myths and legends of the world. You know, we have to bring back folkishness, and that includes the stories of our people and the stories of the world that maybe not be approved by science. You know, I think the contrary, it's like we rely too much on Tolkien. That like we probably should, as a community, read another book that's not Tolkien, that's not Lord of the Rings. I think like there's a lot of people that will rely their political outlook on just Lord of the Rings, and I think we should have more than that. You know, there's I think there's a couple fantasy books that I like, or they're historical fantasy, but that are good. Bernard Cornwell is probably one of my favorite historical fantasy authors, or historical fiction authors. But like, we can have these stories and not think they're. I think we should bring back these stories, bring back the hero and the knight. On January 6th, the Feast of the Kings, the light was commemorated in the festivity and the birth of the sun we celebrate. Thus, in Alexandria, on the night of January 5 to 6, birth of time, Anos, Annan, remembered with a torchlight procession through the temple of Koranen during the procession. The following chant was sung, quote, "The Virgin has given birth, the light increases. The Virgin has given birth, the light of Aaron," unquote. The cult was adopted by Greek culture and ritualized through the Hellenic Empire. We must acknowledge that the surrounding figure of Jesus Christ, even of those who draw these associations to deny him, there appear to be elements of constants, common elements, and mysterious similarities. The primordial tradition of pagan origin brings together various sources of ancient wisdom that disbelieve in the existence or even the redemptive mission of Jesus. In light of great similarities, the figure shares with cosmovisions of Indo-European tradition, which have little to do with the Semitic tradition. This thesis has been upheld in different forms and modalities by exponents of pagan tradition, thought, and undoubtedly in its explicable. This thesis has been upheld in different forms and modalities by exponents of pagan traditionalist thought, and undoubtedly in. It is inexplicable that it has not been intercepted in a secular archetypical manner. The reason for this has been the belief that Jesus was Jewish, not a Phariseeism. Just as for Phariseeism, the Messiah could not, we will see later, to be Galilean. The Veridic tradition could not have been a Jew as his historical epicenter of his design and realization. David Natale, in his book, Did Jesus Live and Die in India? I'll start getting kind of mad. And he kind of goes into like why Jesus could have been born in India and had gone to India, but I think it doesn't make any sense. I'll go through it as but you know, why would the God that's existed before time and space need to go to India to learn anything? We can elaborate. Presents a series of intriguing, though at times speculative, arguments in which he embraces the hypothesis of the Magi from the East, likely operating from the religion of Afghanistan, which, along with Pakistan's linkly close to Indian culture, were Persian kings. According to this view, these Magi were cosmological and astrological readings, identifying Jesus' parents and informed them that when the child reached adolescence, he should travel to India or Afghanistan or Kashmir for a spiritual formation. The Magi themselves, Natalia suggests, later took him there. Thus, Bethlehem was merely a meeting point at which the Eastern sages venerated their long-awaited disciple. Who were these Magi? Descendants of the fire worshippers and the father of Zoroastrianism. Regardless of this hypothesis, it is undeniable that there exists an elliptical gap in the biblical narrative. Yeah, because there's an elliptical gap because, like, the whole point of the Holy Family was for them to live normal lives. You know, Joseph, being a carpenter, taught Jesus how to be a carpenter. Yeah, they spent their, like, we don't have story of any stories or any indication that Mary worked. She sure made clothes, and it's a long time to make a tunic. You know, 50 hours to make a tunic or something crazy like that. But, you know, I just assumed that they worked. And they saved, and they worked and saved, and they lived humbly, and they prayed. They just lived like regular people. So Mary, when Christ had his mission, and after Christ's mission, Mary could live semi-comfortably, without fear of having to work. Or she could just stay in prayer, or you know, do the things that women did, you know, make clothes. But no, most of their week was making clothes and cooking, taking care of the garden, this, that, and the other. But most of the medieval, even before medieval, you know, pre-industrial revolution, the women spent most of their lives, that was a job, just making clothes, you know, tending the fields and making clothes. So I it's a little silly for them to, like, oh, they just worked and they traveled and they lived like millennials. Or they lived like rich millennials. A true void between certain episodes of Christ's childhood, which are left unexplained in the Gospels, and later his ministerial initiation. The elliptical gap is often explained by the lack of documentation regarding Jesus' possible stay in the Far East. For starters, the word magi is Persian, and it comes from magu in Latin, magus, plural magi, magoi in Greek, which means something akin to the seer, prophet, wizard, or sorcerer. Without the negative connotation that these words have today, among the ancient Medes and Persians, these magi were members of the priestly caste, probably in ancient Egypt, the keepers of the most advanced scientific knowledge of their time, including astrology, which is essentially was nothing more than astronomy interpreted according to mythical criteria, and orology, the interpretation of dreams, using principles that even Freud might not have entirely dismissed. The mysterious kings mentioned in Matthew 2 establish numerous apparent connections between Jesus and the East. With the fall of the Assyrians and Babylonian empires, the power of the Magi declining in Persia, Cyrus and Cambyses suppressed the priestly caste, but the reaction was swift. The Magi revolted and managed to install their leader, Gumata, the king of Persia, under the Samerdes. The name bears a curious resemblance to Gumata. However, Samerdes was assassinated around 521 BC, interestingly close to the time of the birth of Shinada Gumata, who we know as Buddha, whose birth is traditionally dated around 566 BC. In the West, the possibility of real astronomical events resembling what happened at the time of the Redeemer's birth was considered to be the great German astronomer, mathematician, and astrologer Johann Kepler, who, after observing the appearance of a supernova in 1604, conceived that a similar event could have explained what happened in Bethlehem, and this was what the Magi from the East had followed. It is, in this way, it would not be a supernatural event intelligible to all, but rather something perceived by the trained astronomical gaze of the Magi from the East. It is not supernatural in the depths of design, does not mean that there is no divine will, that though an irregular and exponential phenomena transmitted a message to the Magi to lead them to the Bethlehem. Now, little to nothing is known about Jesus' childhood, from the massacre of the Holy Innocents to the flight of the Holy Family in Egypt. As we mentioned, there is an elliptical leap, since we have no details of the life of our Lord from that point onward, neither at his childhood or his adolescence. There is a little bit kind of foretold in the poem of the Man God by Maria Valtorte, poem of the Man God. I think it's an amazing series. I've read it all. If somebody is friends with Mel Gibson or a Catholic filmmaker or videographer, and they're interested in a project or looking something for a good Catholic cinema, I would point them towards the poem of the Man God. I know Bishop Williamson liked it. It really kind of gives simple lives, you know, it really points to the simple lives of Mary and Jesus, which is, I think, is in line with Jesus' character and Mary's character. Now, little to nothing is known by Jesus' childhood, from the massacre of the Holy Innocents. Okay, I read this part. The gap has given rise to numerous, at times fantastical, miraculous works recounted in some of the apocryphal gospels. Some of the apocryphal gospels. Luke recounts at the age of 12, Jesus amazed the doctors of the law in Jerusalem with his intelligence. In his answer, Luke 2, but this is canonical gospel and nothing more appears regarding this gap in Christ's youth. Many theories and speculations have emerged. The Russian researcher Nikolai Novich, who reached the Kashmir in 1887, gained access to the documents from the lamas written in Tibet, which speak of a Jesus staying in the region, particular of Nepali. Okay, if it was the same Jesus of Nazareth, why would... It's what it goes back to earlier. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, the minute you, like, think about God's nature and Christ's nature, you know, it is per tradition of the Catholic Church to... The amount of blood spilled at Christ's circumcision was enough to redeem all of the world, because God is infinite, Christ is infinite, and therefore his any blood would be or any blood sacrifice would be infinite. So like the idea of if we're going to keep the tradition, it doesn't make any sense that you know, this all-knowing being that existed before time and space would need to go to Tibet to learn from monks, or learn from the lamas. According to Natalie, Levi H. Dowlin claimed that Jesus arrived in India at the age of 12, brought by Prince Ravana of Austria, and began his studies in Jagath, learning the laws of Manu and the philosophies of the Vedas. According to the author, he was also in Tibet to study the manuscripts of the masters of Lisha. It is unclear whether the tomb or the altar in honor of a certain Nubi prophet, Yusuf Asif, was also Issa in those regions exists. Now, obviously, we are completely rule out the possibility that Christ died elsewhere. His death on the cross, besides being a dogma of the faith recited in the creed, can also be documented in historical events, including non-Christian ones. Not be ruled out as a priori, however, the possibility, because there is a true void. Once again, like, are they, you know, they don't seem like world travelers. They're going to spend time in prayer. They're going to spend time in love of God. Why would they not be focusing on meditation? Like, John, you know, Christ grew up with John, a few other disciples. So why would they not? He spent time with his cousins. You know, it talks about, I forget which, I think it talks in Matthew and Mark, when Christ goes back to Bethlehem and they denounce him because he's just a carpenter's son. Like, what is he even saying? Like, this doesn't make any sense. We can just kind of ignore him. And he gets mad. Christ gets mad at these people for tossing him aside just for having simple origins and being something they grew around. It grew up around. If Christ didn't grow up with these people, why would they cast him aside? Why would they even remember him? So I think this is a little silly. This is not to affirm this theory, but rather to give some consideration to the mysterious and indeed biblical appearance of the Magi from the east of Bethlehem. They could just be passing through, too. Or they could be priming the east, or Afghanistan, or these other places with stories of Jesus. Like, we see that in the Acts, the tomb of the unknown God. So this doesn't mean that they went to these people, these wise men, could have just seen the Lord and spent their lives telling that the God is born. God, you know, and the prophecies are fulfilled. It assumes sounds more reasonable and serious that the miraculous but epiphical clay birds that, according to certain atypical accounts, that Jesus is brought to life with his bare hands. Another document by Natalie in the name of Nag Hammadi text discovered in 1947 and housed in the Coptic Museum in Cairo. In these texts, there appears to be a description of Jesus and his teachings very similar to Tibetan Buddhism, where he encountered the immersion rituals very similar to baptism. So, yeah, I mean, they once again, these magi could have went back and just, told the great teachings of Jesus. And he encountered the immersion ritual similar to baptism. The replacement of animal sacrifice was with purifying immersion, thus related to the traditional Buddha's legacy, of which Jesus, according to his research, was acknowledgeable. And fortunately, the author ultimately supports the thesis of plagiarism of the Gospels. In addition to the heretical denial of Christ's death on the cross, according to the author, Jesus supposedly died an old man in India. Christ didn't die on the cross. He convinced his apostles to go all over the world to die and sacrifice themselves for this new religion, while him and Thomas died in India, Apostle Thomas, but he didn't. He was the one that survived his mother. He's the one that survived all the apostles. So, I think we're entering realms of silly billiness that is unacceptable. Considering with the heretical, blasphemous, and unfutured theory of Colon Kirstein, interesting. However, what is substantial noblesse obligating that is must be acknowledged, it really doesn't. These are just silly. But I guess, he's not a nicer fella. The author's nicer fella than I am. And all these investigations, even though referring to documents that should be clarified, examined, and their present and consistent connections between the figure of Jesus and the ancient wisdom and religion of the Hinduism, along with later deviations into Persian tradition, Mithraism, Zoroastrianism, Manichaean dualism, despite their imperfections and divisions, figures like Saint Aquinas of Hippo developed into these beliefs only to recognize Christ not only as a contradiction but a transcendence of them all. Jesus claimed to be the anointed one by the prophets, the ultimate fulfillment of the law of the patriarchs, yet his teachings and preachings bore similarities to doctrines presented in the Eastern cults. Love for one's enemies had already been preached by Buddhism, Hinduism, and 6 centuries later, Taoism taught the detachment from all things of the world. Where is this at in India? If this is, how is this? Where is the fruit of their teachings? Like, every Indian I know is like is animal sacrifice away from worshiping mammon. So I don't. Where's the love of the enemies? Like, I don't. I don't know what happened in between the last 200 years, but like, Indians definitely don't show any fruitfulness. This Hinduism and Buddhism doesn't show any fruitfulness of this. Buddha exalted his mother above all women, according to the Greek mystery religion of Euclides. The word did not come to punish but to save. The concept of the Trinity was known among the Greeks and the ancient Egyptians. The sick was healed in the time of Mithra and Dionysus, resurrected dead the calm sea and the water, turning the water into wine. In Eastern wisdom, the doctrine of original sin was presented in the Mithraic religion, baptism, fasting, mortification, exercises as well. As penances was practiced in Hellenic rites of Eleusinism, the Eleusinian mysteries were also credited with the Holy Supper, representing eating of the body and drinking of the blood of a god. In short, Christianity can be sought of, as the neo-pagan Gnostics say, as a conspiracy of the rabbis to attract and convert pagans through friction in order to Judaize them, imposing their slave morality. So, if we want to believe the slave morality bit, then we can just assume that they think white people are stupid and have been tricked for the last 200 years. I mean, if you think white people are dumb and have just been tricked by Jews for 200 years, then like, why even like keep on coping? Just like, all right, just submit. I don't understand what the point is. On the other hand, it can be seen as a religion that breaks the moral canons of Judaism. That is the heterodoxy that absorbs an ancient wisdom and also Buddhism and Hinduism foundations. The second interpretation places Christ and Christianity closer to the Indo-Aryan tradition, Indus Valley, that the Semitic culture of the Nile Valley. Hinduism is a term that is itself a questionable since it is a foreign designed by Muslims who took over the Persian culture in the religion of the Brahmins. It is not a founded religion. Time structured on principles with varying degrees of dogmatism resulting from the unification of two centuries, the ancient indigenous religion of India and the religion of the Aryans who came from the north and entered in the second millennium BC. Thus, heliotheism was established, meaning that within a plural and heterogeneous pantheon, only one deity stood out for worship. However, the supreme god who governs the universal destiny has not been the same throughout time. With the promise of Sanskrit, the artificial language, in the first BC, the triad was defined: Brahman, the creator, Vishnu, the preserver, and Shiva, the destroyer. The Aryan influence incorporated with the warrior tradition, the martial brilliance into the religious practice, where the Brahmin priests officiating the cults and worship, and the Krishna began the Hindu warrior. The Kshatriyas were secular power responsible for reinforcing the Dharmatic imparted by the Brahmin priests. Buddhism adopts its imprint, legitimizing martial arts as the part of spirituality and religion. Discipline and self-control come from a form of spiritual fulfillment, both Far Eastern religious etherism, Astro, and North mythology have been absorbed. Knowledge, rites, and dogmas of the ancient Brahmanic religions. At the same time, there are points of contact between Christianity and the ancient tradition. However, it is time of the tradition of the neo-pagan traditionalism denies the question of the figure of Jesus Christ. The valid and sincere questions that arise within whether the connection is merely a whim of consciousness or a conspiracy of the cultural pact against the pagans, or on contrary, whether there is an objective and genuine linking factor that have led the hypothesis that the origin of Jesus was a Persian or Greek. The figure of Jesus Christ appears to be linked before, during, and after this death. Both of the Hebrew religions tradition and the ancient pagan religions, however, as Jesus did not seem to fit within the group of Jews with the Pharisaic and Sadducean orthodoxy of the time, nor much less within the subsequent Talmudic teachings, but was instantly widely embraced by pagans and Gentiles after his death. He also has been viewed as the creation of the cultural pact and thought submission in the Hebrew slave morality to pagans. They would abandon their ancient and aristocratic Indo-European polytheistic creeds by both the rejection and condemnation of Jesus, stemming in the light of investigation for the fundamental lack of understanding of who Jesus of Nazareth was. Jewish collectivism, the essence of the chosen people, is reflected in the Jewish Holocaust. The Shoah is a religious event in which Jewish people undergo their own immolation. As a religious event, the Shoah represents for Jews a moment in which the entire people experience their own Calvary for their own passion. The Jews as a whole, with their own Messiah, their dominion over the universe, will be achieved through the unification of the human races and the elimination of borders. The Gnostic tradition, covertly in the path of individualism through individual means, imitation, and attachment of primordial knowledge via blood memory. The spirit dispenses with any communion to achieve liberation, which in this case is a return to the uncreated origin. The framework falls within the Androtheistic vice. The Androtheistic vice is contrary to Theranism, and Gnosticism is the apotheosis of the human. It is a man who makes himself God. Which you can see that in religion. The Übermensch, mistranslated as Nietzschean Superman, is the most eloquent example of this. All right, I'm going to go back to reading the... I just want to read that footnote real quick. Jesus Christ did not align with either of these previous paths of salvation. As Paloma, the Christic path is the salvation of all through the passion and death of one who is a divine person by hypostatic, also trintoon, by hypostasis and also triune. The salvation implies the true Christic Holocaust, which is neither collectivist nor merely an individual initiatory path. Thus, Christus, theandrism of God, signifies his presence among us as men, offering himself as a self-sacrifice of salvation. Only the Trinitarian mystery can explain this path of redemption, which is not purely gnosis, but also revelation. The celestic path results in the transition of previous instances. A new challenge presents itself as we continue with the paragraph to scrutinize the scriptures to investigate Jesus of Nazareth, the Messiah foretold in the Old Testament biblical tradition, the Christos of the Upanishads, or both at once. And that'll be it for today. The next section is about Jesus the Galilean, Jesus the Goyim, the one that was not fit and pure enough for the racial supremacists of the rabbis. So stay tuned for that. If you need comments, questions, concerns, please let me know what you guys think of this or think of the show so far. Just give me any feedback if you have any. God bless everybody. Until next time. See ya.